It's Ken Bergen here, and welcome to the Hospo Reset podcast. Each episode, I explore trends, innovation, and smart thinking in the hospitality industry with a particular focus on restaurants, cafes, and food service. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with me on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Hi, it's Ken Bergen here from the Hospo Reset podcast. Today I'm talking with Deb Brown from Save Your Town about building strong cafes and restaurants in regional communities. I think all of us have that experience of when we're travelling and you've been maybe going a bit of a distance, it's time for a coffee, or maybe you're hungry, and things are different sometimes in small towns because big city people like me, we're just used to everything on demand and we have to readjust. But then we find whole lots of extra special things too, which aren't in the kind of seen in the conformity of big cities as well. Anyway, great to meet you, Deb. Hi, we've talked, but not face-to-face like this.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Great. So you're in Iowa, that's right? In a small
town? That is correct.
Small town, yeah, okay.
Yep.
So first question, if you go out to eat with friends, what's your go-to meal? What's your favorite?
So I have a couple of answers for you, I think, and this really points to relationships you build in small towns. Do I have my favorite Mexican restaurant? And I am not a vegetable fan, so they always make me, they named it alambros. I don't know what that means in Spanish, but what it is a corn tortilla with Chihuahua cheese, Mexican cheese on it, and steak. And then they bake it or cook it or whatever they do to it. And I love it. That's what, with a little coriander too.
And do they do what parents do, sneak a few vegetables in so that no one notices?
Oh, no. The coriander, that's the, or not coriander, cilantro. Sorry,
yeah.
The cilantro okay. Is the green.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
And then when I go to my local Chinese restaurant, who knows me very well because I like their garlic chicken, they only put in the vegetables I like for me. They'll
nice.
Take the other vegetables
yeah, good.
Out.
Good
so
luck.
It's, you know, we all know each other. I'm in a town of 8,000 people. So being able to have your owner, your server, know what it is that you like best is wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. And we're kind of hitting on one of the key advantages of a small town operator as well. There's that personal thing. And I think we also need to talk about how sometimes people rely on that and sometimes it doesn't work, especially if I'm from out of town. What's your favorite coffee, just out of interest?
Oh, I am I love coffee. I used to work at a internet cafe in Chicago and we served Ely coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a huge fan of Ely coffee.
Nice.
I have lately been trying mushroom coffee. It's actually pretty good, less caffeine, still enough energy.
Yeah. Got the flavor.
And better for my stomach.
Got the flavor as well.
Yep, and got the flavor.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to talk about restaurants and cafes in small towns, and you cover a very wide area of economic development and social development. Just tell us briefly about, you know, how you got to where you are today, what's your background, and, yeah, what are the things you most enjoy about the work you do now?
Well, you know, I'm not young. I'm not super
Me
old
neither.
Either, but I do have a background of many different things, from retail management to underwriting foreign casualty insurance, some bartending. I'm very active, have been very active in the Chamber of Commerce as a director and in communications, and I grew up on a farm. So when you put all that together, you get me, basically. And I did live in cities for many years and came home when my dad got sick, which is a pretty common occurrence for lots of people that return home.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized my small town that I was so anxious to get out of was wonderful. I didn't know it could be that exciting. I found so many cool things to do. And I began working at the Chamber once I came back home. And Becky and I decided we've been together since 2015, and I have been doing this full time since 2017. What do? I teach practical steps to small towns for a brighter, better community. And that shows up in many different ways, through newsletters and videos, in-person visits, keynotes. If you go to saveyour.town, you'll get all the information you could possibly want about
Brilliant.
Us.
And we'll put all the links to that in the show notes today for sure. And what I'm picking up is that you're kind of almost by nature an activist. If something needs organising, you're the one who's going to say, hey, we better get stuck into this. And that's, I think I'm a bit like that as well. I have to sort of stop myself sometimes because the follow through is important as well. But I think it highlights something maybe for our kind of cafe and restaurant owner in a town who's feeling, wow, we need to organise a few things, or, you know, this community needs a bit of this and the other. But maybe they're not activists, the activist type, or they haven't done that sort of thing before. And I was watching a couple of your videos. You've got a couple of free videos up, which we'll link to as well. And you talked to one of the key things you talked about is there's an important shift in leadership in happening, in that, you know, you don't have to necessarily become an office holder in the Chamber of Commerce. People are kind of leading or taking initiatives in different ways. Can you just talk a little bit about that and how that might apply for our overworked cafe restaurant owner who can't get
staff? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, 99% of the things that you want to do, you do not need permission for. And we forget that. We think we have to go to somebody to get permission to do something. So if you start thinking about that and opening up to new ideas, be willing to be open to new ideas, then you don't have to do it all yourself. We teach the idea-friendly method, and it's really taking a big idea, bringing your friends together, find out who else you need to know, and start taking small steps. That's just a really short example of how to start with an idea. Mm-hmm. So if you have a restaurant owner, for example, that would like to have outdoor seating, they don't currently have it. How would they go about that? Well, maybe they'd go on social media and just post, hey, what do you guys think about having a place to sit outside? And see what comes out of it. You know, who starts talking to them, and they'll learn. Maybe we should do it or maybe we shouldn't do it. So then if they decide that, hey, maybe this is somewhere we need to take a leap, well, who are their friends that can help them? Mm. Reach out.
Who's done it before?
A couple of bistro tables. Yeah. And just try it in a very small way. Put a table and chairs outside on the sidewalk. Yeah. And see if people use it.
Yeah, I think about
test out your ideas.
Yeah, beautification of your sidewalk area as well, where, you know, there might be a tree that's kind of died years ago, or there's I saw one recently, a kind of what was meant to be a garden bed, and it was just full of cigarette butts because that's what people do. And this cafe, and I thought, seriously, are you waiting for someone to come and clean that up? Because it's not going to happen, but 10 minutes
Yeah, just
of your
take
time.
A little shovel and fix it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was in a small town that had cut down some trees along the sidewalk that had to come down. They were diseased. And they left a stump, maybe a foot tall. And everybody complained about the stumps and we need to move those. And they didn't have the budget for it. And I made the suggestion, why don't you build some gnome homes? And you have to look that up, gnome home.
Okay.
And it's just really, you know, you make a little tiny roof in, you cut out the front so the gnome has a place to live. You decorate the tree stump until they build up the money or save the money to remove those stumps. Just go have some fun with it. Yeah, and you don't need permission for that.
Yeah.
They've already chopped the tree down. You know it's not any good.
I think the reality is the old ask forgiveness rather than ask permission. Most of our small business owners are pretty used to their various versions of that at times, because you're going to be a bit slow off the mark unless you do some of that. So, yeah, let's broaden the playing field for that a little bit more. Yeah,
you know, you know what the important rules are. You know that you have to have your food prepared at a certain temperature and you don't leave it out for X amount of time. You know what those rules are. All the other stuff that you want to do, just try it out in a small way. See what happens. Enjoy it.
So when you travel around, you've obviously got eyes wide open. I'm sure you take 1,000 photos every week as well.
When I do.
Which is always a great way to inspire people. But what are some of the examples you've seen where a cafe or a diner or something like that is kind of become the center of a small town, where they become the kind of the focus, where people have an informal meeting. And what are some of the elements that make that work?
So one of the things that you mentioned was coffee when we began this conversation. And I have seen coffee shops in various communities that start out literally just as coffee shop, and they put some tables in where the old fellows or the old ladies in the morning go have their morning coffee, and they end up staying there for an hour. And it starts to become this gathering place because they're comfortable, the coffee's good, it's not too expensive. Then work with the students to get your students in there in the afternoon. Not so much to drink coffee, but to have a beverage and maybe a sandwich. So you have to make that outreach. You have to make it work. Mm-hmm. You just can't open a business and think just because you're open, people are going to come. You have to build your relationships.
So you're highlighting the importance of the quality of the coffee as well. Obviously, there's going to be a variety because people like different types. But again, it's a bit of a cliche, I suppose. You know, a friend of and I, Sydney's a big city, and then we go about 150K north to Newcastle, which is the next big city. And we laugh about where the last coffee is in Sydney before you get to Newcastle. The idea is on the way, it's a desert, which is stupid, really, because, you know, everywhere should know that if I walk in, I'm going to be able to get my flat white or, you know, my espresso, whatever it is, or I want decaf or something like that. And interestingly, the coffee companies know this, and they work very hard with training and education and things like that. But there's still a kind of a suspicion. Again, I'm big city cynic here, maybe the coffee's not going to be good.
And that's just not true. That's just not true. With so many people roasting their own beans and creating their own product, it behooves you to go out and try these coffee shops in small towns. One of my favorite ones that when I was in Alaska working, it's cold there in the wintertime, of course, and they have a lot of little pop-up drive-through coffee shops. So you drive through on one side, place your order, go around the bend and pick it up on the other side. Mm-hmm. And it's perfect. You don't have to get out of your car. You can get a bagel as big as your head and really good coffee. Those are folks that figured out what their challenges were and how to overcome it versus someone having to go in the morning, park their car. You don't do that when you go to work. You want to drive through, but I want to drive through with a little bit of attitude and atmosphere.
Yeah.
And they figured out how to do that.
And you've highlighted something that rural businesses have. That's actually a bit of space as well, you know, whereas expensive rent in big cities and no, you can't even park, let alone drive through. But a lot of places, they might have a laneway down the side where they can knock a window through the wall and we've got a drive through or something like that. And drive through, you know, with all the COVID changes that have been happening in the last couple of years, you've been following them, I have too. And drive through is one of the things that's just going gangbusters.
And figure out too, delivery, of course, most restaurants know how to do delivery, but what about pickup service? Mm-hmm. How can you make your parking lot now more friendly to folks to pull in, to pick up and to get out? How can you set up because people aren't coming as much, but they do want delivery and they do want to pick up. So again, figure out how do you make that fun? How do you make that an adventure and experience? You know, can you place your order ahead of time? How do you do that?
So, you know, there's hundreds, maybe thousands of new apps to facilitate all that sort of thing.
Right.
And people, certainly the customers are ready to embrace that. Are you seeing in the small town operators that you talk to, you know, a willingness to dive into the technology? Is there an enthusiasm there?
Yes. For a quick answer, for the most part, yes. Mm. The ones that are not, they're not staying in business.
That's part of a bigger, you know, bigger resistance that they have to the way the world's work changing.
That's a little bit bigger problem. But you know, you'll find out though, if you think about if COVID ever goes away, and I don't imagine that it's going to go totally away, but if it does, now how can you convert that pickup service to use in your local community? How can you provide quick lunches for the guys that are out working out in, you know, out on the highways? Can you figure out how to do a drive-through for a pickup that way? Can you service your nursing homes in some kind of way? How can you continue to do those things, but for in a different
Yeah,
way?
because the potential drivers are there if they can get continuity of work. And that means doing deliveries mid-morning or mid-afternoon for, parcels or something like that. And maybe then they swap to meals again at mealtime or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Our local coffee shop does delivery.
And they have their
I
own
can just
driver,
I
or do
can
they use a service of some sort?
yeah, the owner does it actually because he was looking for ways to bring in more income and keep busy. And he said, I'm going to do this. And he figured it out. Orders have to be $10 or more. So he's doing mostly office folks or people that are in a location and spreading word of his business too. Now more people know about it because, you know, if you bought coffee for four people and only two of them know about you, well, that's two more that know
And
you.
when you need luncheon platters for a big sales meeting or something like that, that's the logical place to ring
Yeah,
up.
definitely.
What about what we talked about, the importance of coffee? It seems to me that a lot of small places kind of, well, they're in existence for 24 hours a day, and maybe they're open from, 7 till 4, or maybe a little bit later or something like that. What are you seeing about people using their spaces and renting out their spaces and multi-use and those sort of things? What have you seen any innovation there that's inspiring?
I have. There's a couple of things. You know, the first thing that pops up to mind is ghost kitchens. And that's where three different businesses can use the kitchen. You might have a baker from 3 in the morning till 9 o'clock, and then you have a lunch provider, and then you have an evening provider, all using that same shared commercial kitchen, of course. That's one thing. The other thing that we're seeing is if you have commercial kitchens in your community, and surprisingly, there are more than what you realize in rural communities. You have to start looking at your local churches, at your schools, you know, take a good look and do some shared spaces. So maybe you have students that are working during school hours. The kitchen, they're making things in the kitchen to learn as part of their coursework. But why couldn't you rent that facility out then for, you know, for lunches or evening meals, depending, you want to know your community. In my town, the streets kind of roll up at 8, 9 o'clock at night, right? But there are communities that don't even get started till noon. So you have to get to know your community and what your folks want as well. So shared spaces, it's a good way to try your idea out without investing a ton of money. Why would you buy a business if you don't even know it works? Why would you buy that building? Why would you do all that work? And you haven't even tried your idea out yet.
And maybe you've got a business, making jams and pickles or something like that, and you just need a commercial space for licensing reasons, once a month or twice a month or something like that.
It's a museum down in Oklahoma, and they also have for sale homemade products that are made in their region. So those people use a commercial kitchen, and then they bring their jams and jellies and whatnot and deliver it to places around the community. So that's really cool to be able to go to a museum and then actually get something besides a t-shirt. You know, I like the ideas.
I was interested to see a thread from someone senior in Airbnb. They were asking, it was on Twitter, they were asking about wanting, suggestions of new products, new services, etc. You can imagine there's a fair bit of response to it. But one thing that came up several times was Airbnb managing the booking for commercial kitchen spaces. And I know in the food and beverage forums and things that I am, there's often people say, I need, a kitchen for a week or something like that. And the Airbnb booking engine and their kind of smarts would be perfect. But I thought about, okay, it's going to be a while before that happens, and they'll do a test market, and maybe in 18 months we might see something. But you can actually do it yourself. There's booking, simple booking apps. You'll have, they sign an agreement, there'll be a deposit. You just make sure your insurance covers this, that, and the other. You might need to reorganize the kitchen for storage, and just, but I think that's a DIY thing as well. If
Yeah, Absolutely. If you have the space, you can actually use a product like Square. If you go to squareup.com and use their booking system and their payment system to make that happen, because you set up the availabilities and people can just find it that way. And it's so ridiculously easy
and
to do.
$100 security camera in the corner to keep an eye on things if you're really worried about things.
Well, and, you know, Airbnb does have Airbnb experiences. So you could list that through the experience instead of staying somewhere. You come for the experience and maybe stay somewhere else. So that's a good way to test it out too.
Big chains, QSRs, McDonald's, you know, big burger chains or burrito chains and things like that arrive in town. They've got, you know, they sell things really inexpensively. They're efficient. They got brand recognition and all those sort of things. What do you see? How do you help our small operators to compete against the elephants that suddenly arrive in town?
Well, first of all, stop thinking of them as competition. They are no competition to you. One of the benefits in a small community is when you have a variety of real restaurants, like a local diner, the Mexican restaurant with real Mexican food, the barbecue joint that uses local meat, the food trucks run by people you know. Those are the places you want to eat. And those are the places you promote. The McDonald's, the, oh my goodness, I am so sorry about Shirley. The McDonald's, the big brand names, they have their own marketing machine. Yeah. They don't need your help. But those local ones, if they band together and figure out how they can become a tourism spot. You know, once you have three of something similar, you become a destination. So if you have three restaurants in a small town, voila, you're a destination.
Yeah, and maybe all be on the same block. Or in the same precinct or something like that. Yeah, and also I think we can, you know, be a little humble and maybe benchmark some of our service and our standards against, you know, the large ones. Too, are our toilets clean as clean? Is our response time as quick? Are the smiles, you know, as consistent? And you mentioned drive-through before. You know, they're doing drive, and sometimes that's why we drive through McDonald's for a coffee, because that's the only place I could drive through.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, figure out how to make some part of your business drive throughable, or at least pick upable, right? Because I would love to be able to text if I'm in a town and I have, you know, they say text here to pick up your food. Oh, great. I would like blah, blah, blah. And then I can just text it.
One of the things.
People don't like to talk on the phone anymore so much.
Yeah, you're right. And why should they? You know, we live on our phone, so let's make it super easy that way, and we'll save this. We'll have a chat when they come to pick it up. That'll do. Another thing that cafes and restaurants are pretty used to is community groups coming in with their hand out and, you know, we need new uniforms for the basketball team, or we need this, or it never stops. And it's a bit exhausting, and, you know, people definitely want to support, but the budget's limited. And a careful, kind of methodical support program, I think, can be a pretty magic part of becoming, you know, the place in town everyone talks about. What do you see? What are your recommendations here? How do we make it manageable but also generous?
So there's a couple of ways that you can do that. You can set your budget at the beginning of the year. I'm going to give $5,000 this year to charitable causes. Mm-hmm. And when the money's gone, the money's gone. So when someone shows up in July and wants money for something, you can say, you know what? I've already donated $5,000 to these, and list the places where you've donated. Keep a lovely list of the things you're supporting in your community. But come around next year at the beginning of the year, and maybe we can be more helpful. And then I have a friend that when the students show up and the younger kids show up, you know, trying to collect money, he will say, does your mom shop here? Does she come and eat here? And the child may say yes or no. And if it's a yes, he gives money. If it's a no, he said, go tell your mom she needs to come here. And then we'll talk about donations.
Yeah,
you know, support each other.
That's kind of a rule for pubs in country towns. They're the ones that the football players all approach for support. And they're pretty kind of straight up and down about, do you guys drink here or not? Fair enough. Yeah.
Well, and you know what? If you have an idea, if you want to be, say, for instance, I own a small pub. I don't want to be $100, $100, $100 all the time. Yeah. but I might put together $2,000 that I want to support a local girls volleyball team. So as the owner, I would just approach the volleyball team. How can my business support you with a cash donation? Mm-hmm. But what can we do with mm-hmm. that? How can we work together more? Mm-hmm. And then just do that.
Yeah.
And share it with your community. Tell them we've chosen to support this year. Don't hesitate to talk about who you support. It's important for the people you're supporting, but it's also important for your business.
Yeah, and it also, you're highlighting something about the silence of a lot of businesses about all the good work they do. Now, they might throw photos onto Facebook, but as we all know, that slides off the bottom of the page in a couple of days, and it's kind of gone forever then. A simple, you know, page on your website, you know, let's call it, it's technically called a blog, even if that word scares a few people, but we actually need more of a record, or maybe it's just on the wall, and some places you go in and there's certificates on the wall, the school sent you a certificate with appreciation.
Maybe it's a whiteboard that you hand write on there, who you supported this
tell
month
people,
or
please tell people.
And don't think of it, you know, rural people think of that, that's bragging, and we're not supposed to do that. Absolutely not. What that is you're supporting another organization. And by you supporting it, you teach other people how to do the same thing. Yeah. So you're helping that organization.
Yeah. And you're also coaching the people who ask, because they're often, you know, a bit nervous about this whole thing, about how to do it. I've seen a couple of places where they have a simple little one-page form. You know, yeah, I'm interested, but just fill the form out for me so we can get some details. And it's just very simple, but it actually, it's a structure. Mm-hmm. And that works for them. And they're building, they're list building as well at the
Absolutely.
Same time. And, of course, apps, you know, things, simple things, you know, with apps now, they all increasingly got loyalty functions added to that. One place, one operator, I interviewed him for the podcast in a couple of episodes ago, Matt Lucas, is in a small country town just off of main freeway, and he is kind of the informal community leader in his town in a way, and he made sure everyone is using the same ordering app. It's not like he made them do it, but, you know, there's one called Bopple, which is, you know, just one of many, but he suggested everyone uses the same app. So there's familiarity and you can see each other's specials. Simple
That's a great
like that.
Idea.
Yeah, using technology like
and
that.
And then
yeah.
I always encourage people to, businesses, restaurants, to partner with local businesses in town. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. I know of a women's clothing store that's two stores down from the pizza restaurant. Well, the two owners are related. Their kids are married, right? So they have that relationship. So the clothing store, anytime someone comes in and buys $100 worth of clothing in one visit, he gives them a $25 gift certificate to the pizza place.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, and it works for both of them. I don't think he pays $25 for it. He probably pays half of that. But it's a win-win for both of them because the pizza place will encourage the people to go shop at the clothing store. So it's, you know, figure out how to partner together with other businesses.
So the thing of partnering with other businesses is, you know, we read about it a lot. What are your tips? I mean, that's a great example. What are your tips for if I'm kind of new in town to sort of get this happening or build up a bit of speed? Because we can have ideas like this, but we actually want people to actually, you know,
take action
as well. Yeah. Well, what's the rules, would you say, to make it successful?
There's a couple of things that you can do. If you're a new business owner in town, have an open event for other business owners. Mm-hmm. After hours, where your restaurant's closed, maybe it's a Sunday morning, whatever it is that doesn't interfere with their business hours, serve them treats. You know, make them something. What are you known for? You known for chili? Make a big pot of chili, whatever it is. And get together and get to know each other. Just have a conversation. Mm-hmm. Sit down. Anytime you put food into the mix, people show up. You know, we don't meet if we don't eat. You know, so this is an opportunity for you to introduce yourself and show them what products you have. But you all, each of you could talk about how you could work together. How could we do could we do some marketing together? Can we, you know, buy some Facebook ads together? Can we advertise in the local paper? How can we all work together? and share the stories that you've heard of other businesses that are already doing
And this is coming back to that informal leadership thing we talked about at the beginning as well. Let's just do it, and maybe you do this, I'll do this, and someone else split it up.
Exactly.
But it's not going to go on for years. We're just going to, it's one project, and let's see if it works. If it doesn't, what's next?
Great. And if it doesn't, we tried it. Yeah. So, yeah. And you don't need to have meetings, and you don't, you know, you just get together and do stuff.
I think it highlights to a huge advantage we have in that we have a coffee machine and we have tables and chairs and we have some time when we're not open that, you know, maybe between 7 and 8:30, you can come and have your, you know, your Rotary meeting or whatever other kind of meeting it might be.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just let's use those empty spaces and make friends and be the host.
You know, our local, one of our Kiwanis, I think it is, they meet at 7 o'clock in the morning at a local restaurant that's not open at seven, but they have a key.
Yeah.
You know, it's a small town. They have a key. They just go turn the lights on, set up stuff, make coffee and have their meeting because they built that relationship with the business owner and it works really well.
Yeah. So thinking about just kind of COVID related restrictions and all those sorts of things, and there's been a lot of government funding in different ways, whether it's state governments or local governments or federal governments, you know, there's pots of money sometimes. And the agile operator is always, well, one thing is, I know it's forced everyone to get their bookwork organised because if you want to apply for grants, you have to, you know, show your tax return and things have got to be up to date. That's in Australia. I'm sure it's the same there with things. But what are your tips about, you know, getting government assistance and keeping your eye out on what's available and making use of things like that?
So this is actually where your local government, your local nonprofit organizations come into play, where you should be speaking to each other. I just got off the phone this morning with a council of governments that called to have a conversation. They're writing, she said, Deb, we're writing so many grants. There's so much money out there. We're writing grants like crazy. When do we stop?
They're applying for them.
Is this something we should stop?
Giving them out?
Yeah, they're applying for them. And they're getting them because there is so much money out there. But they're a council of government. So they represent eight different counties in a state. So who are your local people that, who's your city planner? Who is your nonprofit organizations that have access to this? Who are your tourism department? Find out. You should, if you're a small town, you know who these people are. If you don't, ask your friends. Who do I need to talk to about this? Who do I need to talk to about that? And just go after the money.
Yeah.
I seldom say that, right? But this is the perfect time to do it because
Absolutely. And it actually is a new skill, I think, that the small operators, and they've learned pretty quick. They've had 2 years of practice now, but they learned pretty quick. And, you know, we got our, we know what, you know, the application forms, they all pretty much look like each other. And we know what to apply for. They won't give you a laptop, but they will give you money.
Well, and what if you partnered together and hired a grant writer? Or someone that's very familiar with how to do all of this.
And I bet there's someone in town.
You know, there's a retired librarian or there's, you know, there's somebody and that's where you start. Go to your library and start talking to them. Who do you know? Who do you know? Who do you know?
Yeah. What are you, there's always the sort of the cynics and the negative types and the, we tried it before and, you know, or people in this area aren't really into technology or there's a whole lot of that stuff always floating around, let alone politics. What are your, kind of, how do you keep people moving forward and feeling
optimistic? Well, the important thing to think first is you're going to ignore the really negative ones. You know who they are. They're not going to help you anyway. Just say hello and ignore them. They, and some of them actually think they're helping you because they don't want to see you fail. Okay, so you have to maybe acknowledge that or not, you know, and you have to remember you're in a small town. So that person that's negative about this may be very positive. You're going to church with them and they're actively involved in that part of it. So you know each other and you have to work together. So you can't be mad at each other for long, but you can ignore the negative Nellies. One of the things that I do when someone says, oh, we tried that before, or, that's never going to work, I'll ask them, well, what's going to work then? What do you think would work? How could we adapt this so it could work? and get them on the positive spin, you know? And if they continue to say, well, I don't really want to do that, I'm like, that's okay. You don't have to do it.
Yeah. We're busy.
Have to do it. And then for those that are doing stuff, don't take your projects to the city council before you've done them. Okay. Figure out a smaller way to do something. So when you do go to your council or your people with money in your town to support you, you can go with proof. You show up with 10 friends and said, hey, we did this and it worked and we want to grow here. And this would be a great investment because, look, this is what we've done and you've already got proof.
Yeah. I think that comes back to the work that you and Becky, it seems to underlie, you know, like small experiments, you know, informal, just go ahead and do it, take lots of photos.
Take a ton of photos, that's right.
And show that it can work. And then we go and sort of get the imprimatur or the approvals if such things are necessary.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to, you don't have to make a formal organization. You don't need a president and a vice president and treasurer. Don't do it. Just go do something. Get together with your friends and go do something. You know, if you're meeting with the flower club and they want to talk about planting flowers downtown, why are you meeting in an office? Go downtown where you want to plant the flowers.
Yeah.
Start thinking about having those kind of gatherings.
Yeah. Wear your boots and bring your gloves.
And, you know, as often as possible, do not meet at City Hall. There's something about those buildings that just, you know, they have the years of weight on them and they just weigh you down. Get people outside or in a new place.
Yeah. So a very clever operator that I know who used to run wedding reception places in beautiful rural areas, and his thing was always promote the area first and then, you know, make that a number one priority, and that will bring the people and everyone gains. Obviously you've got to promote your own business as well, but joining in for kind of promoting your town or your region or something like that, it feels like, oh boy, I'm busy, you know, it's a big task. Isn't there someone who's doing that? Isn't there a tourism group? Isn't, you know, sometimes we go into the, you know, aren't they doing it, the old they thing, isn't someone else? So how do I activate that sort of thing?
So remember that new business that's going to invite people for chili? Why don't you just spend 20 minutes and everybody write down a list of really cool things you have in your community? The fishing pond where the kids go catch fish. Doesn't mean anything to you. You don't really go there. But trust me, tourists love it. You know, that funky old tree that you've never seen one like that before. Think of those things that attract people for the different, for the experiences. And make a list and share it. Now everybody's got it. Maybe put it up on a Facebook page or put it on your website and let people add to it.
We almost have 100 weird and wonderful things in a list before we know it, couldn't we? And maybe half of them you didn't know.
Exactly. I'm sure that happens. Yeah.
So how do I then energize, say, my local tourist organization, probably pretty slim resources. How do I activate them or kind of push forward with them? How do I, you know, because they need support, et cetera. How do I kind of get that energy?
So first of all, ask them what they want. Ask them, what do you want? Mm-hmm. What do you want your tourist organization to do in this community? Mm-hmm. And find out if they're even interested. They may not be interested. It would be great if they are. And if they are, they're going to tell you what they want or what they need. And if it's money, that's not the answer you're looking for at all. And we're so used to, those of us of our age, being asked to serve on committees for 2 or 3 years or to serve on a board. Stop doing that. Start working by project. What's the next project you have coming up? You know, I can give you 5 hours on a Saturday before I can give you 2 years of once a month. And by doing that with your tourism people, that'll help.
And that needs, you know, technical term, needs analysis. But, you know, just ask them what they need. It might be that, you know, we need places that are open for people to eat after 8 o'clock at night, because we get so many kind of complaints, or so many people we know, they just drive straight through, or, you know, we need breakfast places that open at 6, not at 7:30 or whatever. Sometimes they're the ones who know this.
Yeah, because people are calling them or telling them about it. And that's, you're right. Yeah. That's absolutely, they know what's needed from, based on what people are telling them. So that's good to know that too. Mm.
And they're the ones, well, it's their job really to be monitoring the social media and seeing, you know, what people are saying about areas.
Hopefully, those, yeah. You know.
Or TripAdvisor or whatever, or the Google reviews, things like that can be a pretty useful source of information.
I just told a client to make up a postcard. She calls it a palm card, so it fits in the palm of your hand. And with your information, mm-hmm. your business information on the front. But on the back, it says, if you enjoyed your experience with us, please leave a review. And leaves the actual Google link that somebody goes to leave a review. Or the Yelp or whatever review system you're using. And they give them out with, for a restaurant, you just give it out with the bill. Yeah.
With the QR code
or a link.
That'll help. That'll speed things up.
Yeah, QR code's a great idea. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Well, you give me lots of inspiration, Deb. Really love the work
Thank you
and Becky are doing. It's always an inspiration. And I think because, you just kind of encourage people, you know, just the idea of experimentation and just kind of try things and... It was a complete disaster. Well, we just won't talk about that, but it's probably never going to be a disaster.
Yeah, and it's like,
what
did we learn from that? How, you know, do we want to try it again or not? You know, it's okay.
Yeah. Winning and
learning. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know what? Yeah. If you want a happy town, be happy yourself. It starts with individuals. It doesn't start with the city government. Yeah. It starts with you.
Yeah. What are some of the resources that would benefit people from you?
So the quickest way to find out most of the information you'll find out about both of us is at saveyour.town, T-O-W-N. There's no .com in there. It's only .town. And you'll find out how you can work with us, the kind of stuff we do, sign up for our free newsletter, check out maybe some of the videos. We've got some videos that you can watch now for free. And Ken, I think you have the link for the latest, which is our Rural Trends, which is kind of a big deal.
Yes. Yep. That's terrific. I'll add that in the show
notes. Feel free to share that. And we speak, we travel, we speak at different conferences and keynotes. I love to go to a community. It's called an embedded community experience where I'm there for 4 or 5 days. And just find out what people want and show them how to get it.
Right. Uh-huh. You're just kind of the resource and do a lot of
talking to everybody.
Talking and
a lot of coffee.
Yeah, nice.
That's the truth.
Yeah, awesome. Okay. Thank you. Wonderful talking to you.
This has been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me. I hope you're feeling inspired after listening to this episode. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with Ken Bergen on LinkedIn and on Twitter.